The Way of Will John.
Welcome back to the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest today. Dr. Randall, how are you doing, sir?
A pleasure to be with you today, William John. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking me. Not a lot of the guests ask. I always appreciate, you know, that cordial intro. But I don't even know where to start. Like we talked about just before off air, you've done so much that it's hard to squeeze all of this down into a conversation. But why don't you, if you have a best way of introducing yourself, maybe you can go ahead and do that.
Well, I want to start out by I've never played soccer, and I'm not a world-renowned soccer player. I used to have friends who played rugby, but that was a kind of different thing. Yeah, they eat their dead. That's they're crazy people, those rugby guys. I'm an inventor. I'm an inventor who has invented a bunch of different kinds of things. The world's first e-commerce business was mine. A nonprofit sending computers to Eastern Europe was my idea. Creating a good news broadcast was another one of my crazy ideas. That one lasted 25 years. And starting a university radio station. But the current thing that I'm working on, which I think is exciting and people will enjoy, is a couple of new books that are fun adventure stories that carry messages about how to engage your dreaming mind. Our heroes and our stories do all kinds of adventures, but it keeps coming back to, well, how do you dream the solution to that problem? And there are a lot of people who could get a better relationship with their dreaming mind.
Wow. Okay, so that's exactly how I actually came across you, which is I ran into a TED Talk that you gave, I'm not sure where, on dreams. I'm not sure how long ago this was. Not too long ago, a couple of years.
Not too long ago,
3 years maybe?
Yeah, a couple of years
And it was really interesting, you know, my own history with dreaming and all this stuff. So I'm actually currently reading Carl Jung, Man and His Symbols.
Good for you.
Which is, it's very interesting. I mean, it's one of those, you know, when you read Jung, it's one of these intellectual, very heavy books. And so you have to be in the right mood, at least I do, to read it, you know.
And with all theorists, you have to take it with a grain of salt that they're telling you more about themselves and their cultures that they come from than about everybody in humanity. In the end, your dream symbols are yours. In the end, they come from your history. You, I'm sure you have a moment that's like your favorite moment in your soccer career. You have a favorite moment from school. You have a favorite moment with your girlfriend or wife or boyfriend. Every one of us has a collection of pictures in our mind of the things we've done in our life. It's all there. And then you pull some of that out each day, depending upon what happened during the day, what's going on with you. You put together a story. Those stories are about you. They're you.
Right. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, that's huge. And one of the things that touched me about what you got into in that talk was also the fact that we don't pay attention to our dreams. We ignore our dreams. And as a society, that's obviously a thing. And it still seems, I guess, I don't know, you'd be better. It would be easier for you to tell whether or not this is true. But it seems as if we're kind of giving a bit more, that there's at least a pushback maybe in this last 15 years, something that we're kind of turning towards. Hey, are we missing out on something? And, you know, I would say to start off with, because on our main YouTube channel, what we do a lot is we enjoy teaching about whether it's life, how to be better as a guy or girl, et cetera, how to succeed at blah, 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 training and other things. But I would love to know for the people that aren't into their dreams, or maybe that would want to, why should I care about my dreams? Why? And
Good
how
question.
Do I get into it?
Why you know? Bother? You're absolutely right. What's the point? It's just, you're going to sleep anyway. And I wake up and I get to the bathroom and I don't remember my dreams. That's where most of us are. And yet, here's this interesting thing built into our brains. It's built in. You can't not do it. And you're going to do it, get this, every night for the rest of your life. Now, if I were to tell you you're going to do something every single day for the rest of your life, you'd go, yeah, I guess it would be helpful if I got good at that. I mean, like cooking, you're willing to put in a lot of effort because you're going to do it every day. You're going to eat every day. So you put in some time to do it right. Yeah. You're going to spend 22 years of your life asleep. You're going to spend 8 years of your life dreaming, more or less, average person, about 8 years. Ask yourself if you're really willing to throw away 8 years of your life. And some people, you know, some people maybe it's good, and I wouldn't argue that. But stop and ask yourself: am I really willing to just kind of throw it away, or would I like to see if I can get something from what's going on in there? Just something. That question. I wonder if there's something in there that would be interesting. That's
so. So how then to go about doing that then? Because everyone's gone through the nonsense of forgetting their dreams. Yeah. I don't remember my dreams. A lot of people label themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't do this. And, you know, I have my own way too, but I'm no expert by any means. I'd love to hear what you found. And does it take long also, no, by the way, for most people?
First thing is I can get it down to two words. You ready? Mm-hmm. Two words. Now pay attention. Okay. Here come the two words. Now, pay attention.
Oh, it's pay attention. Okay. There we go.
You get it? It's all about where you put your attention. It's all about where you attend. You're going to pay attention to something all the time, your entire life. You're doing it all the time. You're paying attention, choosing out of all the things going on around you, something you're focusing your attention upon. I only suggest to people that they pay attention to their dreams for about 5 minutes as they're going to sleep every night. After everything's done, bathroom, toilet, clothes, pajamas, sex, whatever you do, that's your evening stuff. When you're finished all that, you put your head on the pillow and go, it's time to go to sleep now. At that moment, think about, what was my favorite dream? Where have I been before? What would be fun to do? Where would I like to go? What happened yesterday that I might dream about? Or if you got one thing to focus on, like I need to come up with a solution to this problem, think about that in those few minutes going to sleep. The next thing in the morning is to wake up as effortlessly as possible, without an alarm if you can. We notice that people who go to bed at regular times, wake up at regular times, will wake just before their alarm clock. And then write. Do something at that moment. Writing in a journal, writing on a piece of paper, scribble some notes. Our problem with remembering is that we don't make the effort to make that note. And if we write something, even a couple of words, later in the day you look at this and go, and then that happened. Oh, that was so cool. So it's just about paying attention. Now, I also said to all parents, ask your kids, what'd you dream last night, honey? Breakfast table conversation, lunch conversation. Ask them what they dreamt about and listen.
So then once you've done this, let's say this takes, a week to do, 3 days for someone? So for it's some all over the place, right?
For some people, it's the next morning. You put a piece, you put a notebook beside your bed, and the next morning you go, oh, I didn't know. Oh, I had a dream. Whoa, scribble, scribble. Other folks, it takes a while. But once you do this, it opens up your relationship with your dreaming mind. It's a lot like a little kid sitting in the corner with its arms folded going, I'm sure you're paying any attention to me. And when you start to pay attention, your dreaming mind's like, oh yeah, here's some more stuff. Ooh, here's some pictures. And then you start to play with it. You can fly. You can fly.
So what then?
You can hit goals from the 50-meter line.
That was going to be my question. I mean, obviously anything's possible, but how then, you know, and I'll keep it. We'll restrict it then. Once again, just for some of the, we have listeners from all over the place, but you know, restricting it to soccer, football, in that sense. What do I do with that dream? And say I do have an aim. Say my aim is I want to be better at soccer. If we can just start like this,
fine with
what
me.
Happens?
Let's be better at soccer. Let's do that. So last thing at night, William John lies in bed and remembers his best plays. I haven't watched the movies, but I'm sure you have your own set of movies of the moments you hit it just right. Off your head, perfect shot. You were at one end of the field and you kicked it and it went all the way. All of those stuff. They're moments. So just regurgitate those. Bring them back up again and rerun those, okay? What you do right, what you do wrong. Think about it. This is the last thing going to sleep at night. Well, you're going to have a dream sooner or later about soccer. I would expect a football.
For sure.
I would expect you to have some football dreams somewhere along the way. Then what we next ask people to do is to take what they dream about and do it in the world. Try it. Exercise it. Do it as though you saw a move in a dream. So you go out on the field and try it. What happens if I'm remembering Pele, who could do that 360-degree flip over while kicking the ball. I mean, it was just one of those spectacular things to see. Well, you know, how good are you at that? And could you dream yourself up a better way to do it, a method, a technique, and then go out in the field and try it? All right. For normal people like me who don't have exceptional talents like you have, What we try to do is just find some way to bring something from the dream into the world. Like ask the kid about who was the monster? What was the monster doing? Where were they trying to go? What did they have a mask on? Just probing the story.
Right.
So you have a soccer story. What made it unique? What made the move different from other moves you've done? How could you distill that down and turn it into an exercise, an activity? A lot of people draw their dreams. A lot of people will, if you see somebody in a dream, they'll make a point to reach out to that person, right? Especially, especially if there's like some kind of fight or altercation in the dream or misunderstanding. Go find that person and talk to them. That's what the dream's telling you.
So it's an action step, essentially. You're just not taking your dreams to listen to them, or not necessarily just to listen to them. They're giving you something practical.
Correct.
To actually then follow up on. Correct. And do, which makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know if this is the proper place to have a natural progression into this, but I am curious because I didn't see you speak on it. What then for people that want to take that to say, I don't know if you would call this the next level, lucid dreaming. Or something along those lines. Maybe you should explain what that is.
Let me have a second on lucid dreaming. This is like an unreachable goal for many people. The idea of a lucid dream is that you become aware that you're dreaming while you're in the dream. And that's very attractive to people who want to seize control of the experience and make it do what they want it to do, which is fine if you want to do that. My position on lucid dreaming is that it has been a rare experience for me in my life. Most people who talk about it have done it a few times in their life. It's not commonplace. And that doesn't mean that there aren't people in the world who lucid dream on a regular basis. There are some activities you can do. There's some daytime things you can do that would help lucid dreaming. One of the things I recommend to everybody is a few times during the day, stop what you're doing, look around, and drink up all the senses in that right at this instant. Just be as completely in this instant as possible. Just drink it up. Where am I? What am I doing? What's it smell like? What's the wind like? You know, is the sky blue? Everything about right now. And as you do that, look at your hands. So you make a little mental habit of stopping to look around and look at your hands. Now, many people report that little activity done during the daytime on a regular basis, a couple of times a day, to stop, look around, drink it all in, look at your hands, be here now, be as present as you can with the instant. And if you practice that in daytime, pretty likely that during the night, you're going to do something where you attend more completely. And that should be a trigger to wake you up. And there are also people who vend gadgets in the world that are supposed to wake you when you're having dreaming and help you have lucid dreams. There's a current research out on this that's just been released about triggering people's lucid states. But I just counsel that trying to make the dream do what you want it to do isn't necessarily what the dreaming mind's about. It may be trying to tell you what you need to know, not what you want to make it do. So we need to go into the whole lucid dreaming thing going, who's in charge here?
Right.
And I'm I really want to let my dreaming mind do what it wants to do. And for me to be an engaged observer.
Gotcha. I mean, that makes sense. Everything you just described on what to do in order to make yourself lucid dream is the identical way that I had my first lucid dreams. I don't remember now because, you know, when you have you get a little interest in dreaming, things like this, you read a whole bunch of books. And now by now I can't even remember all the books that I read. Robert Wagner, I can remember at least one of the authors of the guys, but I've read so many. And that was by and large, and I believe they called them reality checks in that sense, throughout the day, just obviously looking at your hands. Yep. And it happened the exact same way you said. It was, you know, I can't remember how long it took me. Not very long, to be honest, way shorter than you would think when you set out on this. And it was just that I was out someplace and boom, I'm looking at my hands and I realize, hey, this is not you're asleep. Like went to sleep like 20 minutes ago.
Right.
So, you know, it's very fascinating. And I think you're probably onto something with the fact that trying to control and muscle your dream into the right way is probably not the best way to go about it. I feel, you know, in any of that experience that I've had, it's kind of one, at least the way I've tried to use it is to have a better sense and awareness of, hey, what do I need to know? And it gives you a little bit of a better sense of, you have a bit more control, a little better, it's more vivid to you, you know. So yeah, I find that incredibly cool.
Okay, all of that said, let's just add in so that everybody knows that we're sane and sober here, that if you do find yourself lucid dreaming, it is wickedly good fun to go make yourself go do things in your dreams. I'm not going to deny that. It's totally great fun. And let us side note here, no one ever gained weight from the food they ate in a dream. No one ever got pregnant from the sex they had in a dream. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. Things are safer.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do in your dreaming world that would be difficult or challenging in the real world. But in the dreaming world, you got to kind of do almost anything. It's pretty much free space. Well, this is why I wrote the book that I wrote. I wrote a book because there's so many kids who have nightmares and their parents who don't know what to tell the kids or to talk to the kids about what to do with your nightmare. And I wrote an academic treatise years ago as a doctoral student about nightmares and how you deal with them. And nobody reads academic anything. So I said,
I did. That's how I found you.
Oh, whoa,
I read something.
Whoa, wow.
I'm a nerd. That's how we came across. I should get a pat on the back or something.
Date.
I know.
First person in my life read anything academic.
But I decided to
take what we know about dreaming and try and turn it into stories that were fun. Stories that would be good stories that a kid who's too young to read it on their own would have a parent read it to them as a bedtime story. So what if a bedtime story that puts you to sleep with dreamy ideas? What if that bedtime story is an adventure story? There's a lot of fun where there's a lot of activity going on and stuff that's fun to listen to and what people are doing. And on the way, you're hearing some things about what happens in the hero's dream space. And what's going on in there. You talk about lucid dreaming. The book I've just finished has a concept called mutual dreaming in it. Mutual dreaming is a documented phenomenon where you and I both see each other in our dream. We're both in the same dream together. And we're able to communicate with each other in our dream space to only wake up and look around and go, I'm here at my house and you're nowhere close. But we met in dream space. That fascinated me.
When you say that's documented, sorry to cut you off.
No.
I've experienced shared dream once, I believe, and obviously I don't have any explanation for it. But when you say it's documented, I'd love to see in my head. I can see the people going, okay, Dr. Randall, how is this documented?
Well, I don't have a bibliography I can hold up on the screen right now. Go, here are my references. The phenomena shows up in two places. It shows up in accounts by people who recorded their dream and their friend who also recorded a dream. And an outsider can read both and go, you were in the same place at the same time. The same stuff is here. We also have accounts written by people who basically woke up with their friend or partner and had that, you were there, I saw you during the night. And the other partner shoots back, I saw you during the night. So we have both of those kinds of cases. And then a third thing, which I'm not sure counts, is how many times it's been referenced in literature. That writers have latched upon this as an interesting idea. And there are enough people writing about it for you to say, this is not impossible. But it does defy your notion of how the world works. We all think about ourselves like we're these little autonomous beings. Whatever the dream stuff is, it's all in me. The idea that my thing and my dream stuff touches your dream stuff and that somehow they're in communication with is kind of spooky.
And yet, sure.
And yet it's there.
I get it. Yeah. I mean, yet it's there. And I mean, obviously we've whittled our thoughts and our ways of thinking into the way that they are now in the Western world to a certain extent. And so I'm really curious on two things then, because I did see, and I think it was the shared dream research that I saw that got me onto you. But I would say, what about then, I guess my questions are about consciousness, in that sense. And then the other, what about precognitive dreams? Do you ever touch on that sort of realm, you know?
Wow, so interesting that you should ask that. I think I wrote a doctoral thesis on one of those two topics, or maybe both of them. But all of this stuff, this is a very – I want to be careful here because a lot of people hear words like precognition and telepathy and immediately put up their barrier and go, they couldn't possibly be. I think pretty much the whole history of science is about having those people who put up the barriers and say that can't possibly be. Those folks eventually go, wow, I see how that works now. So it's just right at the moment, you can't find a lot of serious research into things like dream precognition. And yet there are thousands of cases in literature. The problem with all of them, and the problem with all of the kind of, quote, paranormal things happening in dreaming, is that we can't get any external verification of any of it. So most scientists just back away going, I can't deal with this. It's stuff that's going on inside your head. How do I know you actually had that dream? And so they kind of throw up their hands and walk away from it. To me, that's like the big opening. Everybody else is walking away because this is hard. I'm here. I want to understand this stuff. All right. I want to understand the stuff that nobody, you're not going to give me tenure because I'm interested in stuff that's outside of the normal. Fine. Bye.
Right.
Right. I really exactly. want to find out how this works and whether it can be organized or managed. As far as precognition goes, there are a lot of people in modern physics who would say that our universe is just one of many and we don't know how it's coming out. It's not predetermined. And there are all these possibilities. So maybe in that alone, we get images of things in the future that come true in some sort of way. One of the things I have observed, because I've had many precognitive dreams, which are kind of scary because I'm knowing about something before it happens, is that the dreams have to work with the images that are available to you now. I can't see the future as it is. I can only see the future in terms of the things around me now that have some future sense.
So as it could be almost.
As it could be. Also, it's as though here's a person, you haven't met this person yet, and you will meet them later. And when you meet them, these things are going to happen. But you don't dream about that person's face because you need a face that you have now. You don't dream about faces you haven't seen. So that was just one of my observations along the way about precognition, that it was more metaphorical and more a picture image of a future state rather than – it's not like crystal clear. It's more like this is what might happen. And your dreaming mind deals with it that way. So I'm not sure there's any magic flying through time here so much as your dreaming mind being very fluid about inventing possible futures. That's what your dreaming mind does best, is to cogitate, create stuff that doesn't exist. And in the course of doing that, some of that's going to be true.
That makes a lot of sense. I've not had, to my knowledge, a precognitive dream that's been fantastically. As a matter of fact, I can sum up the one precognitive dream that I know really well. I was the night before the night before a game. I dreamt in the morning what would happen before each game. You would weigh yourself in the morning, and my weight does not fluctuate very much at all with all the sports that we play. It's just it stays at this. Well, I for some reason dreamt the exact number down to the. We had these little numbers. It was like 72.646. You can see it. So for whatever reason, my brain figured out what it was going to be, and that's what it was. That's one precognitive dream. Yeah.
Okay. But it's also something that mattered to you, and it's something that you could project immediately into the future that this event would occur in the future, and now you pegged a number that is exactly what you saw. Is that your brain just being fluid about coming up with numbers, or did you actually see the number in the future and bring it back to the dream? I leave the question open. Science doesn't have an answer to this one.
Okay. Well, then that was going to be my place for you to speculate, because since that you've done all of this, I don't know if you do speculate on what's going on with the dreamscape. Is there this possibility that we have something untapped? Did human evolution take a left turn somewhere and we just kind of, because we ignore the dream, is there just a massive ability left that we're not touching? That's my question.
This is one of my favorite topics, and it's one that doesn't have a quick, simple answer. So give me a second here. Part of what's going on is that our dreaming mind, what we experience in the present as our dreaming state, I think is what our ancestors had as their main way of thinking. If you go back far enough, you have to go earlier than clocks, you have to go back before we named time, you have to go back to a world. Think of what the people who were living on the savannas or in the caves, what was their thinking like? Did they think rationally like us? They certainly didn't have our vocabulary. They didn't have our well-developed languages. So what was their thinking like? And I expect it's a thought experiment, but I think that that this is our most primitive mind. This is our earliest form of consciousness. And basically what our conscious, rational, linguistic mind, the one that we use every day here to carry on conversations, that one has kind of beaten up on the primitive old dream. You're stuck in night. We're chucking you into night. That's where you're going to be. We'll let the old-fashioned thinking go on there. Is that old-fashioned thinking capable of doing something we might call telepathy? Is it capable of exchanging information between dreaming minds? I wrote a dissertation on that, and the quick answer is not much. Not to say it doesn't happen, but if you step back and look at it, the occasions when this occurs are few and far between, and they also seem to be not very efficient. Imagine for a moment, let's just imagine for a moment that William John is living in one village down the street from your friend, and I'm living in the village up the street with my friend across the street, and your way of talking to your friend is to do dream telepathy, and my way to talk to my friend is to speak language. Which one of us survives?
Sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just you go dreaming is a dream telepathy. If it exists, if it can exist, which entirely possible. But how inefficient is it? And didn't evolution kind of push it into the go over there?
Could we
resurrect it? Could we make it more valuable? Could we learn how to use it? Ooh, all of that's really exciting. It's like it's there and we have it and other people have it. And maybe it can do some pretty amazing things, but we have to start paying attention to it.
So that is a fascinating way. I've not really thought of it in that. I definitely agree. We must be onto something in the sense that that primitive mind, it doesn't make sense. If they didn't, we've watched the evolution of language. We've watched civilizations get this more complex way of describing things through language, at least, and stuff like that. So their thought process, of course, had to have been different. I can see how evolution and the way we've taken ourselves to is just like, can we just put that over there because there's a tiger here and you got a city to build here and let's just move that. All right.
There. Right. And this old system was really good for getting us going. And it fed us, and we remembered things because pictures of people in our dreaming mind came us and told us things, and our ancestors showed up and reminded us things. All of this is very survival stuff.
Sure.
And you go, the dreaming mind, the earliest kinds of cognition are very, but were those early people in the caves actually telepathy communicating with each other? I don't know, but if they were, I have to note that it's not terribly efficient. And and the guys down the street who are talking to each other, they at the water hole, they're there going, throw the spear that way, Harry. And you're there going, let me contemplate throwing a spear.
So then, but it's interesting because you also mentioned, I think it was in the speech that I saw, that obviously getting better at dreaming, at least even remembering your dreams, you associated that with a sport, like going to the gym and working out, you know, your ability to get better at dreaming could atrophy. So then I throw to you the same question, just as devil's advocate. Maybe I say, okay, well, you don't think my telepathy ability, whatever, my dreaming ability is good, but that's because you're talking to the guys in the eighth division. These are the bad guys. What about the Michael Jordans of dreaming? Like, and what about the ones that are living now? And I would love to know what that's like. Do you have any idea? Like, have you ever met or do you understand these super dreamers? And what is their consciousness? What is their daily life like? What's going on?
Super dreamers. Can't say that I have a posse. See, I'm a very independent.
Gotcha.
I've never joined anything. You've been on teams. I've never done anything in a team in my life. So I don't really understand that. And as a concept, I haven't really gone around trying to find the super dreamers, though it sounds like a really interesting topic. I have to report that I have a peak in my life when I was exercising a lot. And I was exercising not your kind of exercise for the soccer field, for the football field, but the kind of exercise I did was to exercise my dreaming mind. And I would say that there was a moment when I was an Olympic dreamer. I was recording 4 or 5 dreams every night. And my notebooks were by my bed. I had special tools and instruments and things around me to make it easier. pens with lights built into them, all kinds of silly stuff that made it really easy to record dreams. And I was doing four or five a night, and I did that for maybe 20 years. And then as I'm sure some athletes do, you get out of shape, and it's not easy to get back into shape. So I'm down to maybe one a night every other night. And I'm also finding that I have a lot more dream states during the day than I used to, that more times now I find myself kind of staring off into space and having a dream experience. And I think that may be an advancement for me, that I'm getting closer to having dreaming while awake. Can you exercise? You sure can. I mean, it's just like football. You get out there, you had to kick the ball a lot, didn't you? I mean, you weren't born knowing how to hit a ball. So you had to go out there and practice, and somebody threw it up in the air, and you ran under and you hit it, and then somebody threw it up in the air. And you did that 50 or 60 times. And after you did it a bunch, you were good at it.
So did those moments say when you are an Olympic dreamer? Because obviously being able to do that four or five dreams a night at 20 years is ridiculous. That's clearly you are a super dreamer at this point.
Olympic dreamer.
You know, we're going to try and get this in the Olympics now. This is the petition right here. Push this in if we can find a way.
But I'm telling you, it's a lot of work. You're going to laugh, but you have to go to sleep every night. And you have to not, in my Olympic form, I was not drinking or using drugs or doing any kind of evil body things like that. I was really running a clean me. And I was also focusing attention each evening and each morning. And I had support groups. And the stuff you did, it's just like being an athlete. You have a support group. You get out there and go for a run. You do it by yourself. You saunter along. You do it with 20 other people. And you're going as fast as you possibly can with the fastest
runner.
Same deal.
So then did this time in your life, did that correlate with any big changes for you? Did you have any major insights? Is there anything that you could bring that you've brought back from what you've learned in that dream world that you could just be like, hey, this is special, you know, for you guys? Or is it all particular to you? Is there no message you could get across?
The world's first e-commerce business grew out of a dream.
Okay.
All right. I'm writing them down every day for years. I'm basically broke. I have just purchased a personal computer. It's 1981. My wife wanted one. She said, we can't afford this. And I had a dream about a place where people were trading. And we created an online business to help people find each other. You have this one to sell. He has that one he wants to buy. That came out of a dream. And a bunch of the evolution of that enterprise, my wife and I working together on it, a lot of the evolution of that came out of going to bed with a problem and waking up with a solution. And they aren't big and dramatic. I can't say, oh, yeah, we discovered cancer. We didn't. We created an e-commerce business. We also had to figure a whole bunch of stuff out. And a lot of times we're going to bed, the two of us lying in bed talking about the problem before we went to sleep. That's comical. Okay. And then waking up and going, well, I had this. And she goes, I had that. And then you start noodling around with it. Out of that comes the solution. So I think for inventive people, for creative people, for folks who want to develop their ability to solve problems and invent solutions, the dreaming mind's your best friend. Cultivate a relationship with it. Smart.
That's incredibly fascinating, because we had on former NASA physicist Tom Campbell. I'm not sure if you know the name, but he was on the podcast fairly a while back, and he had gotten into meditation and dreaming. And what he found in solving some of the stuff that he was also, I don't know if this was for physics or the lines back in the 70s, or he dreamt the answers to issues and solutions that he was having. And that's kind of what spurred him down to go down that road, kind of, you know, while he was obviously in a very strict scientific space.
Scientific space where he allowed his dreaming mind to do what it does, which is to invent solutions, invent alternatives. It's very, very skilled at creating crazy different things that aren't real. That really is its skill. And so you have to look at that and go, well, what human value does this have, this ability to see things differently? History is rich with stories of people who got critical insights to their problem when waking from a dream. And there's there are many of these, of which some of the most famous are just so interesting. Robert Louis Stevenson reports that he dreamt the entire story for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with a group of little elves running around in his dreaming space acting it out. He said, I didn't invent that story. I just wrote down what they showed me.
Sure. Yeah.
And the stories, I can get you hundreds of those where people attribute to their dreaming. Do this one. How do you do Christmas without dreams? How many critical events occur in the Christmas story, in the Jesus Christmas story?
Oh.
How many of those events are carried out by angels speaking or people having dreams?
Yeah,
there's
tons.
Seven. You can't get through that whole story without bumping into dream after dream after dream. What's that tell you? The ancients thought God spoke in dreams.
That's where I was going to go. Yeah.
The ancients thought God...
Yeah, that's a really crazy concept now, obviously. But you know, because we can obviously when we see and hear things about stories or stories told down or dreams, we've just put it so far to the side that it doesn't make sense. But there are all of these just incredible stories of those things actually happening. And I wanted to go back just before I forget. I think you said after your first e-commerce, the world's first e-commerce business after you created another dream. Went on to provide computers to all of Eastern Europe, which is the place that I lived for a very large portion
of
my life.
That's not quite as dreamy. That was not dreamt up the same way. But it's a logical conclusion from the first
dream. Everything. Okay.
Right. And the concept was one of the things I observed working with people in Eastern Europe at the point in time when the Berlin Wall was coming down. We're talking the 1980s, the late 80s. One of the things that was evident was that the communist system had made technology, information technology, unavailable. It was illegal in most of the communist countries to own a copy machine or a ditto machine. Wow. There were even places where it was illegal to own carbon paper. Right? You were being forbidden from having your own ideas. That's what the law was about. We don't want you to think your ideas. We want you to think the state's ideas. So you can't express your own thoughts in any kind of media outside of the government's channels. I looked at that and I thought, isn't that exactly the opposite? What we're doing in the Western world is discovering that these computers free us up, that I can write whatever I want. I can write whatever ideas I have. I can post them online. I am experiencing freedom of thought. The technology has made it easy. Well, it's one idea jumps to the other. What if you take the computers that Americans are going, this is too old for me, I want the newer one, and you take those older machines, which are still perfectly good and are working just fine, and box them up and send them to the Boy Scouts in Prague and say, here, go write your Boy Scout manuals. Go find the League of Women Voters in Warsaw and send them as many computers as they need to organize the debates between the different parties. Where are the human rights organizations that need to be able to make a database of the evil people? I mean, any of those things. Just feed computers to them. And in 1980, late 80s, I was sending computers to Eastern Europe that basically were the ones that American companies gave me. The AMP supermarket company gave me all their computers, and I recycled the whole lot. And they went from Berlin to Vladivostok. Any place in between that was making democracy happen, I sent computers, some 6,000 machines all over the planet. And I was doing good enough at it that my sponsor said, well, could you do that worldwide? And it's like, once you put it in a box, you can send it anywhere. Where do you want one? Okay. Desmond Tutu, Aung San Suu Kyi, before she was president of Cambodia, of Burma, all kinds of people, civil rights workers in Africa. Every school of journalism in Africa got computers from us.
That's amazing, though. That's absolutely fascinating.
The recycling shelf. Reuse.
I mean, I can't imagine how I'm fairly world traveled. You know, now I still love to. Did you get a chance to travel yourself to see some of the things that you'd actually done and met some of the people that you lives you've changed?
Thank you so much for paying your taxes. Some of those dollars went to fund my travel to places that had no computers, where I would evaluate what could they handle and then ship it into them. Africa, Asia, Bratislava.
So this was through the government?
National Endowment for Democracy was one of my sponsors at that time. We had money from them. It's federal dollars, kind of State Department-ish kinds of dollars, but they're there to try and stimulate people in some other of those places. Things. Yeah, and I had a grant, and it was like my job to figure out who needed which computers. Okay. We didn't do tyrants. We did Democrats, little d. Uh-huh. Anybody who's trying to make, that was my target, was anybody who was trying to make civil government happen. Mm. So thousands of computers. In the day, 1980, whatever it was, and they were still hard to come by and they were expensive. So people who got them from us were like, wow, you're giving me this? It's like, yep, yeah. I want you to have your own thoughts. I want you to write your own words.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
Where have you been in Eastern Europe? Let me just hear a couple of spots.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I have played a lot of my career in Eastern Europe. So Croatia and Serbia. I speak Croatian and in Serbian. Cool. I played in Azerbaijan, where I learned Russian. And so
I got computers in each of those places.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, then there you go. 40 years ago, though, so it's not like they're still using the stuff I sent. It was just at that moment in time. But yeah, Croatia, we got machines on the ground.
Oh, that's so cool.
You were in Croatia, in Serbia. You know about Sarajevo. And you know about the city, and I'm sure you know that there was a siege of Sarajevo as the Serbian government of Milosevic tried to close down the city of Sarajevo. Right? I mean, that was what year was that?
The 80s. I don't know because I'm thinking of the one that happened in the 90s, obviously between Serbia when the fall of Yugoslavia, you know, happened. Right. That's where I'm, you know,
somewhere in the middle of that, there was a newspaper in Sarajevo. Oslobozhenci was the name of the newspaper. And the guy who ran it was, they had a mix of people in the staff. So everybody was from all the different ethnic groups. He kept that newspaper running through the siege. They were being bombarded. They had snipers shooting at him. And he kept his newspaper running. I sent that man computers.
Wow. So did you have anybody that didn't want, or did you have governments trying to make, like trying to make sure like, okay, you need to stop trying to bring your Western. Did that happen in any part of the world or?
Not much. Okay. Not much, but that's not to say it didn't happen. And I'll give you a story from Nigeria where we were placing computers with a human rights organization that the cops would regularly come in and raid the human rights organization, steal all their stuff and go away. They just take all the equipment. So I, recognizing what was going on, I sent the guy a computer that had a removable hard drive so that he could take the data home and hide it better. And then I sent him a carload of busted computers. I said, put these in your office, sprinkle them around. None of them work. They don't do anything. But the next time the cops come, let them haul this shit to the trash.
Yes. That's so good.
Oh, it's just one of those. Yeah, you know what? You can have a whole bunch of my broken stuff, and it would really work for us here.
Oh, that's great.
Gotcha. And the data's really walking out the back door.
Wow. Well, I wonder where that is. My dad is from Nigeria. I've been to Nigeria. They have all sorts of issues.
I'm going to stand up. I'll be right back.
No problem. No problem.
I wanted you to see the book. I want you to see
absolutely.
The book.
All right, we'll link straight to it. Yeah, go ahead. Tell us what you wanted to.
I want kids to read this book. I want the kids who are tweeners, the ones who are old enough to read a book but love when it's got pictures and chapters that are short and easy to read. That's who I want. And I want parents who are interested in their children's nightmares and how to get rid of them to read the book as a bedtime story. And then the perfect kid is the one you read two chapters and they say, give it to me, Pop. I'll finish it. That's our reader. They loved Harry Potter. This is a wonderful story. It's got a great dog in it.
What's it called? I can't. You're coming.
Sorry. Yeah. It's called The Dream Wizard Escapes.
Okay.
All right. Dream Wizard Escapes. And there are other books in the Dream Wizard series. This is the second. The third is in process right now. This is It's fun. It's exciting. The kid who's in it is he makes all kinds of great mistakes, which are just what you need. He gets himself in a lot of trouble.
Of course.
The dog helps him out. But more importantly, he discovers that in his dreaming mind, he can solve his problem. Mm-hmm. How does his dreaming mind find the solution to?
I want to add to that for people that I've heard this. Is it as younger people, we kind of have a tendency to understand our dreams more, have more dream experiences maybe. Have you found that obviously as we grow older, we get away from it. Is that one of the reasons why you're trying to write that book? Because if we can catch these kids mm-hmm. understanding it as yep. young people,
yep.
they'll carry that on to the rest of their lives, knowing that my dreams matter to me, at least.
If someone says to you as a child, what did you dream about, and actually listens and talks about it, just a conversation. It doesn't have to be Freud. You don't have to be Jung. You just have to go, oh, tell me more about that, or what was that, or what did you do then? That alone is enough to set up a lifetime of remembering and going, let me think, what was that about? What's that trying to tell me? Wow, that's so valuable. It's so valuable to have this feedback loop with your own brain, to have your mind telling you stuff that it isn't all that media that you're taking in. It's you coming out. That's so much more interesting. You're very good on television, but frankly, that dream where no one got pregnant from the sex, I'm going back.
But then how come, what about this given to, all right, so you've done something very cool from the outside. Obviously you say on whatever, we have to put dreams still technically in our society on the fringe part of study to a certain degree. Is this something that should be in school? Like, should we have a class? You talk about it, like, shouldn't we have, and who would teach though? That's the question.
I ask the question all the time. How many of you had a class on dreaming? How many of you went to college and even in the psych department? Okay. I'm a psych graduate, Princeton University, even the psych department, finding a professor who could talk about the psychology of sleep and dreaming is like looking for hen's teeth. They'll tell you about the chemistry that's going on, but they can't tell you anything about why you're doing it or how it works or how it's connected to your life. I mean, I think it's abysmal. Everybody does this every night, and we treat it like it's shit.
It's so true.
What are we doing here? What would the alien, if aliens land and say, okay, people, what did you learn from your dreams in the last 10,000 years? And we go, dreams? Whoa, we didn't pay any attention to those. There are other places on the planet, and there are other cultures that are intimately involved in this and are much more aware and much more intrigued by their dreams and do more of that morning dream sharing. I counsel all parents, ask the kids at breakfast, what'd you dream about last night? It costs nothing.
So those cultures, though, that you say that are still kind of in touch, how do they differ from us? Is there something, have they push their societies towards a different route, or what's going on?
They sleep better than we do.
Less stress?
Yeah. Well, different stress. But what we find is that there are people, and I don't want to go into the particulars of it, but there are groups who you and I would call them primitive because their lives are very simple, but their next door neighbor's lives are the same simple. And they are willing to listen more. Let me put it that way. They're willing to listen more. They're willing to engage the idea that the dreaming mind has something to say rather than dismissing it. A lot of those places where I meet people in other cultures who are intimately involved in their dreaming, frequently they have a formula that if somebody hits water, someone's going to die. They have a ready-made dictionary, if you will, of what these dreams must mean. And that, to me, kind of betrays the point. At the same time, that's what their culture is telling them that their dreams are doing.
Are they accurate? So they have a ready-made system for their dream symbols as a culture. Does that help them to kind of get a good language? It creates a language for the dreams, in a sense?
Exactly. It's like their community's language for dealing with that dream. And even though I could come in and say, hey, you could lucid dream, or hey, you could try doing this, or it's like that's what they're doing. And they've got their formula for how it's working for them. I don't want to mess with that. I want to learn from it, but I don't want to necessarily go in and change it in any way.
I would say that it's really interesting, obviously, that we have so many different cultures that have this different type of things. I would wonder what we're going to do as a society, because we like to mess with things. And so my question once again becomes, when you were on your Olympic run, winning all these gold medals as an ironaut. Yeah. Is that technically the term?
I hadn't thought of that one. An ironaut. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So as an ironaut, as a gold medalist, that we've established that you are, you didn't use steroids to do that.
No.
But What about the people that could and would, or what, or are there natural ones? Because, well, I mean, you've got psychedelics.
That one's easy. Your dreaming mind, the chemistry of your dreaming depends upon some neurotransmitters, and you can easily feed them. And this is, I mean, this is going to sound
feed
funny.
Them what exactly?
Well, feed them the vitamins and the nutrients that they use. The main component of your dreaming activity, the mediator, is a neurochemical called serotonin. And it comes from an amino acid called tryptophan, and it needs vitamin B6 as a coenzyme to make the serotonin. Well, shoot, tryptophan's not hard to find in food. It's in milk. Vitamin B6 is a tablet. You can get it in like bananas and other stuff that have high vitamin B6. The food of dreaming isn't hard to come by. And just stop and think that when Mama said, take a warm glass of milk last thing at night, Mama wasn't bullshitting you. But warm glass of milk's got the right ingredients in it. So, you can feed your dreaming mind. But more than anything else, you feed it what you're thinking about before you go to sleep. In those last few minutes, the world is finished. The day is over. You're not doing anything else. You're about to go to sleep. You're lying there in bed. Your head's on the pillow. You got nothing else going on. Think about your dreams in that moment. That's your choice moment.
So then what you're saying, obviously, is that it's not necessary, which is something that I would believe and believe, too. I've never taken anything to enhance my dreams, although I've definitely looked at what's out there to see. And most of the time, it seems rather inconclusive. I don't know if there is something specifically. No,
I'm not aware of any magic bullet that's going to make you into going from zero dreaming to all night long. I'm sure that in the neurochemistry world, there's something out there that could do that, but I'm not aware of it. And it's certainly not on the street. What there is a lot of is a whole lot of people saying this herbal concoction is going to improve your dreams. And most of that's baloney. It's not about food. It's not about vitamins. It's not about taking a pill that's going to make you a dreamer. It's about you paying attention to your inner world and not being disconnected from it. If you're willing to attend to your inner world and pay attention to it, it will reward you greatly.
It'll give back to you. Wow. Yeah. And I would say I'm going to play devil's advocate once again for the people out there that say, great, my day is done. I've done all the things that I need to do, brush my teeth, hopped in bed and sat there. Well, my day doesn't stop just because I want to pay attention to my dreams. Mm-hmm. My brain keeps running. I've got to pay this bill. I've got to talk to this person. I've got this test tomorrow, all that stuff. Well, I can't pay attention to my dreams now because I haven't solved how to pay rent tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what you're telling me is that you didn't finish the day. I understand that. Even in my Olympic era, when I was a gold medalist in the dream business here, I had to pay rent and I had to feed people. And it's a world was full of stuff. It's a key concept that you can't fix that during the night. So don't drag it to bed with you. And what I did in those era was that notebook beside my bed did two things. I had one section that was what I did today that needs to be dealt with tomorrow. And I would write down that list that you just gave me. Oh, yeah, I got to pay the rent tomorrow. And then draw a line underneath all that stuff and say, that's the end of today. I'll do that stuff tomorrow. Now I'm going to sleep. Ooh, what a mindset shift that is. A little tiny mindset. Look, you can't fix that stuff now. So draw a line under it tomorrow. Between now and tomorrow, I wonder if I can get a dozen donuts that are glazed donuts and eat all of them during my dream. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. So it's a pause. It's a break. You've given yourself that out. And that's a good way of obviously dealing.
You're not going to fix that test score. Now, the harsh reality is if you studied during the evening before that test, you'll probably dream some stuff around it. And you probably will do better on that test. Because your dreaming mind has taken the information from the books and stuff and integrated it and turned it into mind stuff.
Sure.
So, yeah, if you want to pass the exam, you want a solution to the problem, you can incubate the solution to the problem by putting the problem in front of you in those last few minutes before you go to sleep. I need to solve this. Noodle around on it. What is it? What's all its properties? All the things you do to create a problem, solve a problem, and then go to sleep.
Is there a common what if it doesn't happen on the first 2-3 is there a troubleshooting thing? Is it just screw it, you just gotta suck it up
I'm sure you can find somebody to sit here and tell you that you can make them do what you want, but I'm not your guy. I can't make my dreaming mind dream what I wanted to dream. And rather than being upset about that, I have to revel in that. The dreaming mind's brilliant. Mm-hmm. It'll do what it needs to do, not necessarily what my daytime tax-paying, money-earning, store-going person cares about, but what my inner being cares about. This is part of the reason I tell people, you don't have to go try and change them. Just take them the way they are and see what they're telling you. It's all about you, and no one else is in there, so you don't have to tell anybody any of this. You can just go, let me pay more attention, have more fun. Just go for the cheeseburgers and the sex. I'm telling you.
Exactly. Well, that'll give that low-hanging fruit right there is going to give you enough energy to get into it in the first place. I mean, I definitely have seen, at least in my miniature research, that that is what spurs a lot of people on. Flying, sex, food, sports, fun. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Go in there and have fun. All right. Yeah. I mean, just, there's a whole bunch of us that are like, "Ooh, solve problems, figure out your inner being. Fuck it. Yeah. Go have a good time. Eat some pizza and revel in it. It's free. It's built in. Totally. You're going to do it every night anyway. So you can either get good at it and have fun with it or waste it. Your choice. It's just so simple. You either just go, "Now this is stupid, I won't have anything to do with it," or you go, "Yeah, I wonder what I might find out about the world. What might
Waste it?
Right? Why waste it? Didn't you?
What about? Have you run across any of this stuff? And I guess I don't think this is truly conspiratorial, but given what we know about dreaming, what we understand now, at least many people understand. What about? Have you come across any research that the government at these, or like large universities or institutions, have done on dreams or being able to manipulate dreams, anything? Is there any information or things that they might have an inclination on that we as a society either wouldn't believe or don't yet know and understand, and that they're already like, "Okay, did you guys know that we could do this?" Have you found anything like that?
Well, no. I mean, the idea that this is not to say that there hasn't been a tremendous amount of research. A lot has gone on with monitoring people's brainwaves while they're asleep and waking them at the end of their dreams and deprogramming them to get the story of the dream. There is dream telepathy research that was done in the 70s that's worth reading about. But in terms of the government, in terms of sort of big institutional money, grant money, it tends to go towards sleep problems, sleep apnea, the number of people who are waking during the night because their tongue is falling down in their throat and they're having difficulty breathing. The government's money is much more aimed at the health aspect of sleep rather than necessarily the enlightenment aspect of sleep. It's not to say that there haven't been researches done. The stuff on lucid dreaming, modern research on lucid dreaming, is all done out of grant money. But I don't think I don't see any effort to try to do, can we take Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious and find evidence of it in communal dreaming or monitoring a lot of people's dreams? The government doesn't seem to be very interested in that.
Well, then, if you had all of the grant money and research, what would you do? What would you do? Is there something out there that you would put together this massive Dr. Randall study? Is there something special out there?
Well, since I don't have all that grant money that you're talking about, I'm going to do what I can do, which is to write stories about dreaming that are fun and hope to entice people into attending to their dreams because it's fun to do, because they read a cool story that said, "Hey, you could do mutual dreaming. Try it." And quite frank, I'm in the middle of the third book right now, and I just realized that the fourth book is going to be the textbook that kids would read at the night school. I invented this little place called Night School.
Okay.
All right. So now what's I'm this? On, what would be in the book that they would hand you if you came to night school the first night and you were supposed to become a powerful dreamer? What would they be handing you? What would be the assigned readings? And that's beginning to bang around in my head, like, "Ooh, well, maybe why don't I write that book?"
Oh, like, that's awesome.
It's got to have a dog in it. Awesome. It's got to have an adventure. It's got to have some crazy stuff.
Does it have to have a dog? Why a dog? Why do you include pets?
dogs. Every one of my stories has a dog. Actually, all three of the first books are all Scottish border collies. I just happen to like the dogs. When I was a kid, I read books like Lad and Lassie that were about collies. And I like the idea of having the dog.
This companion.
In my stories, the dog is how you know dreaming is happening, because the dog shows up and the dog does things in dreams that he doesn't do in the real world. So dogs are interesting. They do a lot of things by having a dog walk around.
Yeah, no, I've yet to have my own dog. I really wish I did. It's going to be one of those things, you
William,
know.
William, John, you need a dog.
I know.
Except they tie you down. And that's...
Do they? Well, in what real sense? Do they can't travel with them? No, they can't travel anywhere now.
They want to walk three or four times a day. And
let's go running. It'll run with me.
That's great. It'll be fine. And then they want to eat a couple of times a day. And then you got to clean up the poop a couple of times a day.
Yeah.
And so you go, well, all of that's like, tie me up. I can't leave my house because I got to take care of the dog. But I can still go dream. No matter how COVID locked down you are, you're doing dreaming. And are you talking... Are we talking about our COVID nightmares? Are any of us talking about our COVID nightmares? We're having nightmares. We have a nightmare experience going on around us. There's a lot of nightmarish stuff in the news right now. What are we doing to approach those nightmares that kids are having about masks, COVID, school, Zoom? You know,
Zoom. Yeah, I've had enough Zoom. Yeah. Right.
And so kids are having nightmares about it. What's mom saying? Oh, pay no attention. It's a dream. Wow. That's the wrong answer. We give that answer. We Americans do that a lot. Nigerians. What I'm saying is there's a whole lot of people who are just dismissive. When you go, you're having nightmares. Yeah. The nightmare isn't there because it's stupid. The nightmare is there because you're scared about something.
And so I've heard you mention that also this in your talk. And when you said, you know, oh, my mom told me it's just a dream, whatever. And your mom told you. Well, it's really funny because I have a mom who did not tell me that. So interesting. But she's passed away now, but she was very into a whole lot of these things, you know, in a very interesting sense. But what she said when I had my dream and I'm pretty sure, because I definitely had nightmares just like any other kid, and I would shout out and one of my parents would come in and, you know, handle it. Mm-hmm. It was when I had recurring nightmares is when she told me how to deal with them. So she actually did not.
Smart.
Mom's yeah.
Smart.
I didn't. She didn't. I don't recall at least any advice on the nightmares that I was having. But when the recurring one happened, she told me to, A, it's in this dream you realize that you can, A, control, you can turn back to whatever is facing you and handle it. And then she said you can also control what happens. She said it's no problem, it's you, it's for you and it's yours, you know, and so you can handle it. What happened, I was it was a dream where I was in a circus type of thing. People were chasing me, you know, bad guys are chasing you and I'm running through something. Well, I remembered what she said. It was at least the third or fourth time that I'd had that same dream. I turned around and I must have been whatever, you know, playing video games. I somehow created a rocket launcher. I shot the rocket launcher. I turned into the rocket, then chased the guys away. Never had the nightmare again. I don't remember. I probably didn't have a nightmare for God knows how long. You know, so it ended it for me. And that was
what
I remember.
It ended it. Yeah. And it ended it because you changed the ending. And all the prior times you ran away from the monster. And what we normally do is we run and wake up so that by the time we're finished with the dream, we're scared. We've been chicken and we ran away from it and we woke up. We missed what the alternatives were. Mom is very savvy. I commend mom. Is mom the Nigerian?
No. She actually, it turns out she is very Nigerian, but she is American. She was from Chicago. My dad is from Lagos, Nigeria. Okay. Yeah.
Lagos. Yeah. Wonderful town. Abuja, Nigeria is one of the places I've got a whole bunch of African Abuja. So my question is, mom said, do it. You can change this. And what you discovered as a little kid was that you didn't have to run from the monster, that you could turn. All right. So turning is the first piece of this. The I don't have to be running from you. You also did the other critical thing, which is to call in support. So you weren't doing it all by yourself. You weren't frightened. This is one of the key things parents can do with their children when kids have nightmares is go, well, who can help you? Let's make a list of everybody who could come help
you. Oh, wow.
Start with the dog. Start with pop. Mom would show up. Uncle, auntie, whoever's around that the kid goes, yeah, they would be helpful. And if the kid can't think of anybody, bring in the Army and the Air Force and the Navy and a thermonuclear device and a couple of Saturn V rockets. I mean, you bring anything in, it's a dream. You can do anything. Totally. And what we're trying to do is just get the kid to think of alternatives. What else could you do? That monster, did you ask him what kind of ice cream he likes? All right, so I just tripped you with a different way of thinking about the nightmare monster than running or waking up, that we could turn and face it. We could call in the Army. We could ask it what kind of ice cream it likes. Ask it if it'll take its mask off. That's another one. It's really easy. Who are you really? What's behind that face I'm seeing? Mm-hmm. Right? And those are all things, just parent talking to child, exercising alternatives. This doesn't call for a degree in psychology. It calls for the ability to say, well, what about this? And try some other ideas out. Trying those ideas out, that plants the seeds. The kid goes to sleep. The kid will try one of the ideas out.
It was life changing, and that's simple. Obviously, something to tell. It is so dismissive. I wonder if we're actually going to get to that point where it will be. You know, go ahead.
I'm thinking about how many other traumatic nightmares there are. The running from the monster is very, very, I mean, that's a,
it's a common one, right?
Common nightmare scenario, running from the monster. The one of walking into the wrong test and taking the wrong exam is everybody who got straight A's in high school, they got that nightmare. They all have it. It's just amazing. High achieving people all have the nightmare of being about failure or going to the wrong place or doing the wrong thing and getting it all wrong. And so that's,
could there be some use then for this? We're getting close to being finished here.
I think it is useful. I think the dreaming mind is exercising alternatives. It's in the business of thinking new ways for you. Your mind and my mind are basically in the business of surviving. And we do the things that are the routines we do. We do things that take care of us, that pay the bills and put food on the table. Your dreaming mind's in the business of dreaming up alternatives, and which is why we use the word when we talk about, oh, I have dreams and aspirations. We use the word all the time to talk about what might be, and yet it's like not paying attention to it. How much of our creativity has been thrown away because we're not paying attention?
Oh, probably a ridiculous amount, especially because we're not sure of how infinitely deep this source of, you know, solving solutions. Can it solve a solution to, if it's done so much? Wasn't DNA, wasn't the structure of DNA also come from a dream? Thomas Crick, I believe his name is. I know there's a ton.
Crick attributes a bunch of stuff to his dreams. But the list is so long. It's a shame to stop with the one or two that are the most famous examples.
Uh-huh.
The list is long of people who, if they didn't actually get the dream to solve their problem, they attributed it to the dream because it was such a novel idea. Sure. Elias Howe inventing the sewing machine and moving the hole in the needle from one end to the other end. It's just a classic. It's just a simple change of arrangement of pieces, but it's a breakthrough for him. And he gets it in the dream. There's lots of those.
Tons.
And so it tells us that it's real. Now, there's one final piece to add to that. And then we go back to our telepathy topic. And I'm going to tell you a story I heard from Gregory Bateson, who was an anthropologist, one of my teachers. He said, you must remember the story of the porpoise. And so, William John, the story of the porpoise is important. Now, there's lots of stories written by sailors on old-fashioned sailing ships who fell overboard. And as they're watching the ship sail away from them, they know they're going to die because they're out in the middle of the ocean with nothing around. And along comes a porpoise who kind of bobs the guy, plays with him, hits him with his nail, whatever, and pushes the guy and eventually gets him to an island where he gets out of the ocean, onto the island, and eventually is saved and is on a ship going home. That person goes home and writes a book called Our Friends the Porpoise. That person goes home and tells all of his friends about how the porpoise loved him, that the porpoise cared, that the porpoise saved him, the porpoise this and the porpoise that. Gregory Bateson says, we don't have any of the stories from the guys whose porpoises took them out to sea and they drowned. Those guys don't tell stories, okay? No. You have to map that back to telepathy and to precognition and all of those things, because the stories we hear are only the positive cases. If you go to Las Vegas and dream that you're going to win the big one and you put a dollar in the machine and you hit a big payout, you'll tell everyone. But if you dream you're going to win a big one, you go to Las Vegas and lose all your change and go home broke, you don't tell anybody about that.
Yeah.
Right? And so all of our precognition stories, all of our, wow, this is amazing, you have to put them through the porpoise test and go, is this just, we're hearing the story because it's so rare and so unusual and it's so positive and it's so proving the idea that the dreaming mind's magical that we believe something that may not be true. So the porpoise story is always there to remind us before you buy any of what I've said so far.
Totally.
Yeah.
Measure it, balance it with with everything else, which is good advice for everything and anything in general. I was just going to to follow up and to hit on one last thing real quick, though, that I'm curious about. We had on a U.S. Army Ranger, which is this elite level of the Army. You know, there's some special battalion, this really top of – it was really interesting to talk to him. He's actually the captain of the U.S. men's Paralympic national team. So really, really interesting guy. But he suffers from – he was in a helicopter crash. They fell from 500 feet up in the air. He's one of the very few survivors in it. It's just a absolutely insane story to hear. And he suffers from a lot of things that are going on with his brain, different things that he has to do and to relearn. I asked him, do you have any doctors, have they given you anything? Are you doing anything to help retrain your brain? Is there and he said essentially he said I shouldn't say this, but he said I've given up. He said the things that make me happy are playing soccer, being able to reuse my body, utilize these things and stuff like that. But is dreaming used at all in any sense for, or could it be used, or are we not using it for things like PTSD, people that deal with trauma? Is there, or could there be a way for someone, if they're willing to delve, you know, everybody has a different way of healing and doing certain things, but like if someone, is there a place you can go and just be like, all right, well, we're going to delve into this. And maybe it has a better way of healing than all the pills and the drugs and the things that we love to use in our society.
We dive into the pills and drugs. Just take this pill and you'll have dreams. You were asking me just a minute ago. If I could write a prescription to the world, it would say, get a group of people together that you like, and every once in a while sit around and talk about your dreams. It's so easy. We call them dream groups. You do not need to have a licensed psychologist running it. All you need is people who give a damn. And are willing to talk to each other and share and keep things confidential. We're going to hear things about each other's lives. We keep it confidential. But just that process of getting together. The soldier, I would commend that the VA hospitals, some of them, have dream sharing groups. And this is a place to work on reorganizing how you think. PTSD has impacts on people are having those PTSD nightmares all the time. Do we do anything with the nightmare? No, here, take this pill. You'll sleep better. And that, for our purposes and our culture, means sleep and not dream, not have that nightmare, which is crazy. Okay, here's the nightmare. Let's talk about the nightmare. Where'd it come from? Why do you have it? What's it doing for you? How do you want to change it? Mm-hmm. And if the dream groups, if I could salt the world with dream groups, that's a very healthy thing to do. And you're in the locker room after the game. Ask one of the other guys, what'd you dream about?
Yeah, maybe funny enough, we did do that. Yeah, well, I have a couple guys on at least a few of my other teams, and one, he's a goalie, and we have this joke basically in our company that all goalies are crazy, and it turns out that the majority, statistically, and this is not just soccer, but they seem to be out there. But we would talk about our dreams, and they would tell these false awakening dreams where you wake up and you think that you've woken up, but you haven't, really.
Right.
And we had some guys that had some really funny ones like that. But I think the issue is that, we take the pill in our society because we're not really necessarily maybe ready to have that level of introspection with ourselves because it's annoying. It hurts. You don't know what's going on. You don't know where it's going to take you. And so it's much easier if you just pop the Ambien. What a weird thing to have Ambien as a thing. I've taken it twice on two flights, very long flights to South Korea.
Yep.
Not a thing. I don't have them. I have no issue sleeping. It was just I was young enough and they had them and they just handed them to us. Not something I will ever do again. I'm sure it helps some people, I guess, to a certain degree. But yeah, it's not a type of sleep. When I dream and when I sleep well and go to bed at a good time, have a good dream, wake up, I always feel more rested than
Hello. So, it's your brain doing what it wants to do. It's doing its business. This is what it does. Right? And it's like, why do we fight with this? This is your brain. It's telling you stuff. It's your best friend. Nobody else in there but you. And how much more can we know about ourselves? I don't think there's a limit here. And for those people who have very specific religious beliefs, you can talk to Allah or you can talk to God in your dreams. You want to talk to your Shinto spirits? They're in there. You want to talk to Jesus? He'll talk to you. If you don't believe in any of those guys, you won't have those dreams. You know? So just go where your dreams are. Go hang out with them. And my religious friends are like, oh, yep, I talked to Jesus in my dreams. Good. Glad you do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then, perfect. Like, why don't you throw up the book again? We will link to everything. Please do throw it up. We'll make sure that we've got links to everything. Dream Wizard.
Dream Wizard Escapes.
Dream Wizard Escapes, and this is book number two. It's out or it's coming out?
It's on Amazon right now.
On Amazon. We'll have
as
link.
Of today, it's available in one store in Boston. One of the scenes, this is funny. The whole book takes place in Boston, and one of the scenes takes place inside a hardware store. Well, the guy who runs the hardware store is still my buddy. So I sent him a box of books, and I sent him a poster. I said, put it up in your store. Let's see whether we can get people in that neighborhood to buy the book because it's about that neighborhood. Let's just see if we can start there. Yeah, Dream Wizard Escapes. It's on Amazon. A pleasure talking to you.
Definitely. Thanks. No, it was awesome. You definitely have to come back. As the books come out and as we check them out, you definitely have to come back on. We'll talk more about it. Cool. And we'll make sure to link out to everything that you've got going on. And thanks for being here.
You've got great brains in your head, fella.
I'm trying.
Somebody who was a soccer coach once told you to go out there and kick balls around. You do that. You're very good at it. But you have good brains in your head. And you're interesting topics to ask. So I commend you on this podcast and encourage you to keep doing it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah,
great.
Definitely will. All right,
William.
Guys, we will see you later. All right.
Score.
Peace.
Skol. Namaste.